Saluton from BA. This is a Rorschach multilateral update from the 19th of August 2025, a summary of what's going down in the world's major multilateral institutions. To begin, we'll look at NATO. On Wednesday the 13th, Germany announced it is teaming up with other members of the alliance to send about $500 million in military gear to Ukraine using a newly arranged NATO supply route. The shipments, prioritized around air defense gear, come as Ukraine faces brutal Russian air raids that have killed over 12,000 civilians. Most of the equipment is US-made, and deliveries will roll out this month, while aid from Nordic nations is expected in September. Since the conflict began in February 2022, Germany alone has contributed around $47 billion in military help. On Thursday the 14th, the UN released a report detailing how in 2024, conflict-related sexual abuse jumped by about a quarter, with over 4,600 survivors officially recorded. The most affected countries include the Central African Republic, Congo, Haiti, Somalia, and South Sudan. Most of the violence came from armed groups, though some government forces were involved. The UN warned that the real number is probably way higher than what's recorded. 63 groups were named for such abuses, and for the first time, both Israel's and Russia's forces were put on notice to take steps to avoid being added next year. Also on Thursday the 14th, the International Labour Organization, or ILO, announced a new partnership with Indonesia's FinTech Association. The goal of the partnership is to help small dairy farmers get easier access to loans and financial services. Many farmers struggle to borrow money because banks see them as too risky. To change this, the ILO launched a pilot project in East Java that uses farm production data collected in real time to give lenders a clearer picture of farmers' businesses. With this information, banks can design fairer loan products. On another note, on Wednesday the 13th, UNICEF released a report noting how violence in the Syrian region of Sweida caused hundreds to flee from their homes and killed several children earlier this summer. Healthcare took a big blow, with clinics damaged, two doctors killed, and ambulances under attack. UNICEF called the situation heartbreaking but noted some progress, with aid convoys finally reaching the area. The fighting wrecked water, power, and fuel supplies, leaving basics like food and medicine scarce. Since we mentioned children, on Wednesday the 13th, the International Organization for Migration announced it will back a new external push to stop child trafficking hidden behind sports recruitment. With children making up 38% of global trafficking victims, the sports industry's weak safeguards leave huge gaps. The initiative calls on clubs, federations, and governments to adopt stronger protection systems, fair recruitment, and training tools so young athletes can chase goals without being exploited. Going back to Ukraine for a bit, on Monday the 11th, UNAIDS announced that the country has about 250,000 people living with HIV, and almost 100,000 are not being treated because of difficulties related to the ongoing war. Luckily, despite nearly 3.7 million displaced inside the country and millions more abroad, the health system, supported by UNAIDS and partners, has kept antiretroviral supplies stable. Early in the war, drugs were moved to safer regions, creating reserves to prevent disruptions. Shelters and services now provide safety and treatment links, but the response leans heavily on international funding. Cuts from key donors, especially the US, could put this fragile progress at risk. In some more health news, on Thursday the 14th, the Pan American Health Organization announced that Oropouche fever is spreading widely in the Americas this year. By late July, over 12,700 confirmed cases had been reported across 11 countries. Brazil accounts for nearly all of them, with more than 11,800 infections and 5 deaths. Panama has passed 500 cases, while Peru, Cuba, Colombia, Venezuela, and Guyana each reported smaller numbers. A handful of imported cases also turned up in Canada, Chile, the US, and Uruguay. Overall, the virus remains a growing regional concern. Oropouche fever is a viral illness transmitted by mosquitoes. It usually causes a flu-like sickness that can last about a week. Common symptoms include high fever, headache, muscle and joint pain, chills, nausea, and vomiting. While it can be very uncomfortable, it does not always become life-threatening. In other news, on Wednesday the 13th, the EU and United Nations Development Programme teamed up on a new four-year project called UCARES to help Caribbean nations better handle disasters. The UN is working to boost multi-hazard early warning systems in places like Belize, Grenada, St. Kitts and Nevis, and Suriname, with inclusion in mind, especially for women, people with disabilities, and remote communities. It is helping governments to plan smarter recoveries using tools like digital post-disaster needs assessments. The goal is a stronger, more inclusive recovery and preparedness across the region. In trade updates on Friday the 15th, China filed a lawsuit against Canada through the World Trade Organization over Ottawa's steel import restrictions. The complaint targets a recently introduced 25% duty on steel products containing Chinese origin materials, which China says is illegal protectionism. The World Trade Organization can settle trade disputes generally by providing a system where member countries bring complaints if they believe another member has violated trade agreements. This process ensures that disputes are resolved through rules and dialogue rather than retaliation, helping maintain stability and fairness in the global trading system. In Africa, on Wednesday the 13th, Kenya's central bank governor announced that the country is pushing for its next International Monetary Fund deal to come with financing attached. The country's last $3.6 billion US program was cut short in March, with Kenya missing out on the final $800 million tranche after failing to meet conditions like trimming its deficit and raising taxes, plans that collapsed amid deadly protests. Analysts say Kenya badly needs fresh financial support to cover debt repayments. For some context, the fund can offer programs that focus on policy reforms and guidance rather than direct financing loans. For Kenya, such a deal could still help reassure investors and donors of its fiscal discipline, making it easier to secure funding from other sources. Overall, it is possible that Kenya will get a deal without financing. Shifting gears, on Friday the 15th, the election monitoring arm of the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe deployed a mission to Moldova ahead of its September parliamentary elections. The team includes 15 experts in the capital and 30 long-term observers spread across the country. They will be joined later by more short-term observers closer to election day. Their job is to watch how the vote is run, covering campaigning, media coverage, financing, and dispute handling. Moldova's most recent countrywide election was clouded by controversy after reports of interference and manipulation. Observers said practices like vote buying, disinformation campaigns, and the use of illegal funds influenced the outcome. While the election itself was conducted professionally, external pressure and biased media coverage shaped the broader environment. These developments fueled concerns about the integrity of Moldova's democratic process and the extent of foreign influence on its political future. And to wrap up this edition, on Friday the 15th, UN talks through the environmental program aimed at crafting a global treaty on plastic pollution ended with agreement after 10 days of intense debate. Over 2,600 participants gathered to try to finalize the treaty's text, but couldn't settle on a version. The environmental program's head acknowledged the disappointment, but emphasized the organization is more committed than ever to environmental protection. The UN and its different bodies have emphasized that plastic pollution harms marine life, contaminates food chains, and contributes to climate change through both production and waste mismanagement. By promoting policies, global agreements, and sustainable alternatives, the UN aims to protect ecosystems and safeguard public health. And that's it for this week. Thank you for joining us. Are you listening to us on Spotify? Remember, you can leave comments on the episode. No need to worry, they are private by default and we won't publish them. Want us to get back to you? share your email. We can have a chat. See you next week.